You better work. Paul Andre Charles first began working as a drag performer in the late 80s. The world was much different. Drag shows took place mainly in gay clubs and elaborate ball competitions. There were few, if any, television, film, music, or modeling opportunities for men who chose to appear in wigs and heels. But attitudes began changing in the 90s, and performers like RuPaul, Lady Bunny, and Lip Synca became quite popular. In 1992, RuPaul recorded a dance hit called Supermodel, You Better Work. And from 1996 to 1998, he had his own show, The RuPaul Show, on VH1. Most recently, he's become the host of RuPaul's Drag Race, a top model meets Project Runway show for aspiring drag queens. He's also just released a new book called Workin' It, RuPaul's Guide to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Style, which is published by It Books, an imprint of HarperCollins. And I'm very pleased that It brings RuPaul back to our show. Hi.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
You are not dressed in drag. Do people immediately assume, because they associate you with drag, that you live completely in drag?
Well, you're born naked and the rest is drag. We're all in drag. We all play roles. So in that respect, I am in drag. Everything you put on after you get out of the shower is your drag. Mm. It's just that, you know, with drag performers, we make it very easy for people to understand that concept. But most people don't want to understand that concept. You know what I mean? I can get into that a little bit later. In fact, that's what the book Working It is about.
Well, you also undermine that whole other idea because you have a mustache.
Well, yeah, lots of ladies have mustaches. You know, we all, our culture is based on this us against them, looking for differences in people. We all have so many more similarities than differences in this.
I guess the popular conception is that the typical process is to begin dressing in drag and then to eventually live as a transvestite or a transsexual. But you separate your professional from your everyday looks.
Well, you see the popular conception. The popular conception, people, we are a very primitive culture. So you can't base real reality on popular conception. I mean, they voted Bush in twice, okay? So if that tells you anything about popular conception. You know, the truth is we are all drag queens. Everybody is. Listen, the world is divided into two types of people. People who understand that this is all an illusion and we are mere actors on the stage. And then the people who actually believe they are the roles they're playing. Those are the two types of people. Drag queens fall into the first in that we play with all the roles. We switch it up, change it up, wear all the costumes in the wardrobe department. Doesn't mean that you are, you know, your clothes or your car or the religion you are. You know, it's all farce.
Attitudes are changing. Polls indicate that younger people are less likely to want to discriminate against gays, for example.
I don't know. Maybe New York or in L.A., Chicago. I don't know. I travel a lot in the middle of America, and things don't change that much, that fast there.
Well, you grew up in San Diego.
I grew up in San Diego. I left there when I was 15 years old, moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know where I'm from anymore. I'm from Charles de Gaulle, JFK, LAX, Heathrow.
But you say that when you were growing up in San Diego, you write in this book, you loved exploring at the beach. And those trips proved significant because you learned something about yourself and about the world.
Absolutely. I learned that I needed to follow my heart and that by doing so, I would be up against other people who felt threatened by that. And I've been, you know, I'd go to the beach and the kids back in my neighborhood would, when I'd return, would think, oh, you think you're better than us? You think you're white or something because you go to the beach? Now, this is San Diego, California, the most beautiful beaches in the world.
Black people don't go to the beach in San Diego?
Well, a lot of people feel very complacent and feel very threatened when they leave their area. And it doesn't matter if you're black or white. People feel very comfortable in their comfort zones. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if it's the greatest thing on earth. You know, they say that when a prisoner who's been kept in a cave for years and years gets freed, that prisoner longs for its time back in the cave.
Now, there was a time when drag performers were in shows like the Jewel Box Review. It was kind of like a comedy event. straight people to go see those kinds of things. When did you start decide? When did you decide that you want to make your living as a drag performer?
Well, you know, it's sort of, you know what I did? I was clear enough to hear the universe's stage direction for me. I was set out to be famous and be the next David Bowie in a rock and roll band. And my band members and I decided, well, for this one show, let's do drag, just to, you know. Because you know,
and a lot of rock performers were doing drag in those days.
Yeah, well, that was before. I mean, glam rock had happened in the early 70s. I'm talking about the Reagan 80s when we were doing what was referred to as gender F word, which is smeared lipstick, combat boots, and a pinafore, and just ripped up clothes. You know, so that's what we went for. And the reaction I got from that was astounding. And I took note. I thought, this is an angle for me. Of course, in doing so, I had to work through all of my childhood conditioning, as it related to dressing up in drag. You know, I had to work through all that stuff. And that's why on RuPaul's Drag Race, these new kids who are coming up, they don't have a lot of that shame.
So how did you decide what kind of look and persona that you wanted to assume?
Well, you know, listen, I'm a businessman, so I did whatever the client wanted, Leonard. So, you know, when I started out in the rock and roll, it was the gender F word, and then moved into what I like to call black hooker, which was so much fun, you know, but that was shaved legs and breasts and shaved chest and looking really sexy. Like, you remember 28th Street in the 80s? 28th Street and was it 10th Avenue? Remember that? And the real biological working girls would have teddies on and, you know, leggings and love, like the Mary Jane girls, the Rick James group, the Mary Jane girls. Anyway, that was the black hooker look.
What about the look that was in the drag ball world that was depicted in the documentary Paris is Burning?
What about that look?
Well, that's something that was big when you came along.
Well, you know, those kids were from Harlem who, you know, a lot of them were not very educated, and it's slightly different from the sort of bohemian East Village group that I had come from. You know, we were intellectuals who were, you know, dabbing in the sort of post-Warhol philosophy that you can create a star. And in essence, the Paris is Burning kids were the same thing, but more a different, more raw version of that.
Although I assume some people found an inspiration from that film.
Oh, are you
felt
kidding?
Liberated by that film.
I talk about that film every single day. I was just talking to Drew about how I quote Paris is
One
Burning.
One of my producers.
Yeah, every single day. In fact, on our TV show, RuPaul's Drag Race, which is on Monday nights on Logo at 9 o'clock here in New York, you know, I slip in some reference to Paris is Burning every single show. The other night I said something about when you make the dollars, and that's something that Pepe LaBeija says in the movie Paris is Burning, one of my favorite movies of all time.
You weren't content to perform at nightclubs like the Pyramid and gatherings like Wigstock. Did you feel like you had to make compromises to become a bigger performer, to break out of that?
Well, compromise is a part of life. But, you know, my goal was always set on more, more, more. You know, when you look at the trajectory of a human life on this planet, you got really 75 years, basically. So when I won Queen of Manhattan in 1990, I figured I'd peak downtown. It was time for me to go above ground. So I changed the look, put up a demo taped together for a record company, and boom, that's what happened. And Supermodel became a hit. I changed my look. I made my look more Disney sort of caricature that was non-threatening to Betty and Joe Beercan out in Poughkeepsie and Pacoima, and it worked. It worked.
You actually began working as a model for MAC Cosmetics.
Yes, yes. That was great.
And were you surprised by how accepted you were so quickly as
no.
a drag performer?
No, I'm a likable person. I wasn't surprised.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there still is a fair amount of prejudice out there, as you've pointed out a couple of times during this conversation.
Sure, it's out there. Let me tell you something, though. You know, when I hit it big, the big change, the big breakthrough came from within. You know, when I decided to go above ground, my initial thought was, well, I can't do drag anymore. I have to do sort of an androgynous look, right? So then it occurred to me, well, why can't I do it in drag? Where did I get the idea that it couldn't happen in drag? And it came from inside. The calls, madam, are coming from inside the house. Get out of the house. Get out of the house. So I got out of the house. I changed my mind, therefore changing the world. Now, I hope people got that. But it starts from within. And that's what my book, Working It, is all about. In fact, I just want to mention, I'll be signing copies of Working It at the Borders at Columbus Circle here in New York City tonight at 7 o'clock.
That's it. At 10 Columbus Circle, right? Mm-hmm. How much do you attribute the change and your popularity to an increase in the overall visibility of the gay culture?
You know, people ask me that question all the time. You know, I guess there has been a change. In my eyes, it's not fast enough, not quick enough. I guess there's a change. Listen, I was born in 1960, and I lived through the sexual revolution and the gay rights and women's blacks, blah, blah, blah. You know, we went backwards so far. It's hard for me to say, oh, wow, things are great now. Will and Grace, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I don't see that much of a change.
Yeah, well, there's usually a backlash within the community, isn't there? Were the people who were resentful of you for being able to break out in that way?
Well, you see the cheekbones on my face. You see these gorgeous legs. Of course, there's going to be resentment.
People are just going to be jealous.
Hello.
Then you had your own talk show on television. And you had that book, Letting It All Hang Out.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that, 1995? That's what brought you here last time. How does this book differ from that?
Well, the first book is more autobiographical. This book is really more of a style guide, and not just style of how to put clothes on, a style in how to conduct your life. This book is really about navigating your life between your ego and your spirit. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. So what happens is, on a daily basis, you have to keep some equilibrium. This book is your guide to keeping that equilibrium.
Especially if you want to be a successful drag queen. You give them advice, tips for breaking into the business, and you offer beginner drag queens something of a crash course in etiquette. Why is it a must for new queens to shape off their eyebrows and paint them in another way?
Well, it's not just a guide for drag queens. It's a guide for anybody if you want to keep that equilibrium in your life. Everybody is inundated with all these media messages that say, you're not really clean unless you're zestfully clean. And, you know, oh, my God, so-and-so's got a baby bump. Guess who's dating so-and-so? But all this stuff that really doesn't matter. And if you don't have a baby bump, you feel very left out, right? So navigating and keeping that balance is what this book is about. It's not just for drag queens. It is for anyone who's ready to walk the walk and stop playing small and ready to own their greatness.
The book we're talking about is Working It, RuPaul's Guide to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Style. With photographs as well from Matthew
Anderson has done my hair and makeup for 18 years.
And in the book, you talk about what it takes to get yourself camera ready. Can you tell us what that entails? Don't you generally wake up at 4:30 a.m. to begin the process?
I wake up at 4:30 a.m. just anyway because I'm a morning person. I go to bed at like 8:30 at night. But, you know, the get ready process is, and this is for
you
everyone.
You go to bed at 8:30?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that when everything starts happening?
Yeah, I'm 49 years old. I spent about 30 years in nightclubs.
I'm 49, RuPaul. I go to bed later than that.
Well, you know what? I don't go to nightclubs. I live in L.A. and New York, and I love the daytime, especially in L.A. I go on a hike. I do a morning meditation. You know, but the waking up early to do the drag really is... It's first of all, it's getting your head together, you know, and that's for anybody, whether you work on Wall Street or you work at McDonald's. You have to sort of work out the other side of this muscle that counterbalances your ego. You have to work out your spiritual muscle so that you can keep a balance. That's the name of the game, and that's what Working It is all about.
Your television show, RuPaul's Drag Race, on it you kind of take on roles similar to Tim Gunn from Project Runway and Tyra Banks. Was that the idea from the start?
Well, everybody wants to compare. We live in a world of polar opposites. I guess it's fair that they compare it to that. But drag has carte blanche to sample everything. The role of drag throughout history is to remind each culture to not take itself so seriously.
Do you miss doing radio? You were on KTU.
I'm doing radio now.
You are.
Yeah, I did radio all this morning promoting this book and stuff. So
But you were the host of your own show playing music.
Yes, the problem with morning drive radio, and I'm sure everybody in the booth can relate, is that the suits upstairs make it impossible, especially if it's commercial radio. You have to do all these contests and stuff. And it became unbearable. But I love the medium. I love it. And I love people who listen to radio. They're a different breed. You know, I love it.
Meanwhile, people will be able to meet you tonight, signing books at 7 at the Borders store in the Time Warner Center, at 10 Columbus Circle, and the book, Working It, RuPaul's Guide to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Style. It's published by It Books, which is an imprint of HarperCollins. And let's go out with a little RuPaul. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. They want to be me. I am the